From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore ranks second in the country, behind Detroit, in the number of tenants threatened with eviction. In any given year, about 6% of Baltimore's renters are evicted. Most likely of all to face eviction are Black women with children. We'll talk to Zephyr Shaw, staff lawyer with the Public Justice Center, and Karen Wabeck, senior staff attorney with the Homeless Persons Representation Project, about how public policies work against tenants in rent court, what's changed recently, and what changes they'd like to see. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Baltimore ranks second in the country, behind Detroit, in the number of tenants threatened with eviction, according to a 2013 survey conducted by the U.S. Census. A report issued in December by the civil legal aid organization the Public Justice Center found that each year in Baltimore, about 150,000 complaints are filed by landlords seeking to evict tenants or get them to pay up. Between 6,000 and 7,000 of Baltimore's renters and their families ultimately are evicted each year. That works out to about one family out of every 17 who rent. This week, the Homeless Persons Representation Project and the Public Justice Center will be discussing eviction with the public. Matthew Desmond of Harvard University, who has written a book titled Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City, will be at a discussion Thursday night. It's part of the 2016 Jane Harrison Speaker Series on the importance of housing. With me now are two people who will be part of a discussion following Matthew Desmond's talk. I'm here with Karen Wabeck, senior staff attorney with the Homeless Persons Representation Project. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Zephyr Shaw, staff attorney with the Public Justice Center. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Sheila.
So, Zephyr Shaw, some people may think, you know, eviction is as simple as you don't pay your rent, you get evicted. What are they missing? What should they know?
Well, I think what is missing from the common sense idea of going to court in an eviction case, and also from our housing policy in general, particularly in Maryland, is an understanding of the complexity in lives of poverty and the contradiction between what's called a summary process of eviction, you know, a rapid adjudication unlike any other type of collections process in the state. That happens in less than 2 weeks, and the ins and outs of the relationship between the landlord and tenant, which is, like I said, very complex, deals with lots of issues of liability, frustration, hostility, trying to squeeze a complicated situation into a streamlined, informal adjudication in most instances just doesn't make sense.
So you're not saying, although you are a lawyer, you're not saying complex legal process. You're saying the lives of people who rent, especially poor people who rent, are complex, and and in particular what they have to deal with and what landlords have to deal with is complicated.
I think, yeah, you know, as an attorney, I do find the complexity legally, right? That's what my job is. But kind of going to the macro level, and I think this is really appreciated well in Matthew Desmond's book, Evicted, is that there is not a black and white situation in a rental eviction. It's complicated and difficult for landlords to provide good housing. And as well, and probably more so, it is very difficult to manage your rent, which it sounds so easy, right? But to make the rent when your housing costs burdened, when you have myriad other obligations as a poor person that are going to necessitate very difficult compromises and negotiations. That's just a process for both sides of the equation that really isn't done justice in our court system. And again, there's also a fallacy I just want to bring attention to right off the bat, which is that this is two sides of a coin, right? Landlords versus tenants. That's really not the case, because there is a very intrinsic role which is public policy. Everyone who's in charge of making decisions about housing policy, whether it's city council or, you know, the governor, the legislature, they all have skin in this game. What's happening in rent court, for instance, that leads to 7,000 evictions in Baltimore City is a decision by our policymakers.
Karen Wabeck, Zafar Shah just told us complexity is what most of us don't get about eviction. What would you point to?
Well, I think Zephyr's right on point. And to my view, this all sort of goes back to the dire problem we have with a lack of affordable housing in Baltimore City, in Maryland, and across the country.
How hard is it to find affordable housing?
So the Baltimore City Consolidated Plan, which we're currently under, it covers 2015 to 2020, noted that the housing cost burden is by far the most common housing problem in Baltimore City.
In other words, the rent's too high.
The rent is too high. Absolutely.
To what degree? Is it quantified?
Sure. So the prevailing fair market rent in the Baltimore metro area runs over $1,200 for a two-bedroom unit. And in order to afford such a unit, households would have to bring in over $51,000 in income, which we know is far above the median income for renter households in Baltimore City. You'd have to work multiple full-time jobs at minimum wage to even begin to afford a two-bedroom market rent apartment in Baltimore City. So for many of our clients and many of our neighbors here in Baltimore City, the dream of safe, adequate, affordable housing is completely out of reach.
That is Karen Wabeck of the Homeless Persons Representation Project here on the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me is Zephyr Shah of the Public Justice Center. We're talking about eviction in Baltimore. Zephyr, you mentioned Matthew Desmond's book. It focuses on eviction in Milwaukee, and he notes that one in five Black women who rent there reports that she has been evicted at some point. You work in Baltimore. What is the picture here of who gets evicted?
You know, in one way, it's this is not surprising. In other ways, when you look at it, it's startling. You walk into the district court during a rent docket on any day of the week, you will find almost all the defendants are Black. Nearly all of them are Black women. If you live here and you deal with this every day, that's just the norm. We did a statistical survey in 2014 and 15 of the rent court. We surveyed 300 defendants at rent court, and we found that 80% women, 94% African American. Those were our surveyed renters. And so the racial disparity is outstanding. It's just, it's something that we ignore, but how did we ignore it? Black women make up only 37% of renters in Baltimore. And yet they're so deeply over-concentrated and over-represented in the court system when they're facing eviction.
Okay, so slightly more than a third of the people whose names are on the lease, the renters of record, are in Baltimore, are women. 37%, you said. And yet they make up something like twice that of renters facing eviction. What's going on?
You're seeing the consequence of decades of housing policy that has failed certain segments of our population. And to have those sort of startling numbers and overrepresentation of African American women who are marginalized in so many ways in our society bears that out.
Someone could hear your description of the desperation of so many tenants and say, yes, this is exactly why landlords need to move quickly when someone starts falling behind in rent, because landlords are running a business. They need to protect themselves from exactly the desperate policy that you've pointed out to us.
I think it's not sort of the simple equation of you pay your rent or you don't pay your rent in this case and you get evicted, that there are often other factors at play, including one that Matthew Desmond addresses in his book, and that is substandard housing conditions and the widespread failure of landlords nationally and here in Baltimore to address and fix sometimes life-threatening and certainly conditions that are dangerous to the health and safety of the tenants. And we have a problem here in Baltimore where landlords are letting these things go. And when tenants attempt to raise either defensively or affirmatively on their own behalf a defense to a rent case or to file.
And let me just interrupt and make sure that that's clear. In other words, you're saying when a tenant says, yes, I haven't paid the rent because there's a hole in the roof or because there's a vermin infestation and right. I'm withholding my rent until that gets fixed.
Correct.
That would be raising it affirmatively?
That would be raising it defensively if your landlord has already filed a rent case.
Okay.
You can also raise it affirmatively, so you don't have to wait for your landlord to file a failure to pay rent case.
Okay.
You can go into court and file a complaint to put your money in escrow with the court until the conditions are repaired. But we know that this system isn't working for tenants here in Baltimore City.
That's right. We saw in Public Justice Center's study, we saw that 3 in 4 of the surveyed defendants didn't know they could raise poor conditions as a defense. We saw that 60% of the folks who came to court to defend their case actually had a threat to health and safety in their home.
More than half.
Well, actually, 80% had problems like that. But it was 60% who had not only the problem, this threat to health and safety in their property, but they had also given prior notice to the landlord seeking repairs before they were even sued and came to court. So that's 60% of the defendants who had a prima facie defense. Like, they could have just come to court and said to the judge, this has happened, I gave notice to the landlord, and that's my defense to even paying the full rent. And there would have to be some adjudication of that claim. But in actuality, only 8% of those people, of those tenants, succeeded in raising the claim.
Why?
And that is because of systemic obstacles in the court process. The summary ejectment, this rent court docket, is not designed to have a full adjudication of both the landlord's right to collect the rent and the tenant's right to safe housing. It's flooded with litigation, the 150,000 cases. It's also more or less a informal process where, on one hand, it's supposedly designed for self-represented litigants. You should be able to come to court and not have to have an attorney. But landlords nearly all the time have representation, whether through an attorney or a very experienced non-attorney representative, what we call landlord agents. On the other side, tenants don't have that kind of freewheeling ability to be represented. They would have to find a legal services attorney in the short amount of time before their trial date, and there's just not enough of us. We can't possibly meet the demand that there is, and we can't get the funding for it. There's no right to counsel, even when you're facing loss of housing.
That is Zephyr Shaw of the Public Justice Center here on the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about eviction. Also with us is Karen Wabeck of the Homeless Persons Representation Project. Since Public Justice Center issued its comprehensive report last December, has there been any change in that picture? I mean, I gather there is still not anything like equal legal representation, but are judges making more space for tenants to raise the defense of I didn't pay the rent because there's a problem
right.
with the apartment?
Yes, certainly there's no movement on a right to counsel. But the judges are doing what they can do with knowing that, you know, the legislature has to step up and change the law in many respects. What the leading judges in the district court have done is to streamline the process where a tenant can actually raise these problems, even where, you know, this rent court case is just about whether they pay the rent or not. So whereas we saw previously that judges were instructing tenants, don't bring up anything else except the money you owe, now they're actually informing tenants that there is a rent escrow process. You can bring it up if you can, you know, substantively talk about the problem. And then the actual paperwork, the administrative part is easier now than it was when our report came out. And what we have learned very recently is that, you know, where you had 1,000 cases, maybe 1,200 rent escrow cases a year historically, already this year, in the past 9 months or so, we have already almost 800 rent escrow cases filed. So we'll probably exceed what we have historically seen. And, you know, that's some modicum of improvement. It's not the permanent structural improvement we want to see, though.
Karen Wabek, you talked a few minutes ago about there just isn't enough affordable housing. If someone is evicted, how can this affect their ability to obtain housing?
So it has sort of a domino effect in many areas of a renter's life. But with respect to finding replacement housing, whether they're looking on the private rental market or on the subsidized rental market, an eviction is going to be a barrier to securing new housing. There are some rules and regulations that govern subsidized housing programs in this respect. There's a, for example, the Housing Authority of Baltimore City, if you're evicted from federally subsidized housing, you'll be ineligible for a period of 3 years for other subsidized housing. Private landlords, if they're running credit reports, criminal background checks, eviction history, they're going to oftentimes, you know, elect not to rent to a tenant who has a history of evictions because they see that as setting themselves up for failure.
Well, what about that? Isn't that being a smart business person on the landlord's part? How should that be addressed, a history of evictions?
Well, I think that you just looking at a yes or no or a date of eviction on a piece of paper doesn't even begin to capture the oftentimes very complex story of that eviction. For example, all of the folks that Zephyr talked about who had very serious housing conditions in the unit that they were renting, you know, those numbers don't capture those stories. There can be any myriad of things, domestic violence, job loss, and on and on. And those things tend to be lost unless landlords are open to or required to consider sort of mitigating circumstances when selecting new tenants.
So do you see a way of making that happen?
Well, I think there's a real push nationally right now regarding reentry issues and criminal record issues, and that's another significant barrier to securing affordable housing across the country and here in Baltimore. And so I hope that we will see some reforms as far as landlords taking a different approach when considering a criminal history and what types of things should be a legitimate reason perhaps to deny a tenant. But we need to have a really serious conversation and some additional policy changes to see affordable housing opened up to the segments of population for whom it is currently out of reach.
Zephyr Shah, I'll give you the last word. What would be your first priority if you could make it a change?
You know, I think prescriptively we just have to hold landlords accountable. If they are good business people, they need to run a good business. And that means that we need more comprehensive licensing of landlords with annual inspections or, you know, biannual, whatever it's going to be. The majority of landlords using the eviction process, they aren't licensed because they don't have to be. And we have to change that law in Baltimore City. But we have state laws that require rental properties to have lead risk reduction compliance. And yet, you know, over 60% of landlords who haven't complied with the lead risk law end up with judgments of eviction. So they're using legal processes when they haven't followed the law themselves. That baseline has to stop. I think more aspirationally, we need to remember that it's not just a business. Housing is a public good. It's a human right. There has to be more of a public policy emphasis on making sure that not only is there affordable housing, but that we're not pushing people into housing loss simply because the dollars don't make sense, right? In our rent court, tenants, the median income was only $1,200. 15% of them had public housing assistance. That means that they're using Social Security, they're using TANF, they're scraping together any money just to make rent, which, you know, leaves them having to make other types of bad decisions, skipping their medication, not arriving to work on time. You know, there's going to be a trade-off. We have to have a policy that makes sense of that trade-off. We can't ignore it and think that the market will just bear out and be healthy.
We have to leave it there. I really appreciate your helping us understand it better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Zafar Shah is staff attorney with the Public Justice Center. Karen Wabeck is with the Homeless Persons Representation Project. The event I mentioned with author Matthew Desmond is so popular, it is sold out, but you can find more information about the 2016 Jane Harrison Speaker Series on the importance of housing on the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We are On the Record. We hope you'll go on the record with support for WYPR. Here's Nathan Sterner to tell you how.